Salo Falava. I'm Afamasanga Seyuli Salamasina Von Reiki, and I'm inviting you to join me on a journey through the evolution of our Pacific cultures on Culture Compass. We'll meet incredible people dedicated to preserving traditions while adapting them for today's world. Join me as we travel the Pacific to celebrate our resilience, revival, and deep-rooted connection.
Search for Culture Compass wherever you get your podcasts to listen.
This is an ABC podcast.
This is Stories from the Pacific on ABC Radio Australia.
Hello and welcome to Stories from the Pacific on ABC Radio Australia. I'm Bobby McCumber. What makes a former military paralegal shift their entire career to become a filmmaker? Born and raised Pompeian, Matt Howard shares more about his journey into shifting his soaring career to capture his community and other Pacifica nations through the lens. He'll tell us why he did it and how film can be a powerful medium for amplifying Micronesian storytelling. Matt, welcome to Stories from the Pacific.
Kasalel and hello, Bobby. Nice to be here with you.
Lovely to be here. And we are here in Hawaii as well, so it's nice to do a face-to-face interview. What were some of the things that you first captured when you started photography?
Yeah, some of the really cool things that I got to capture was I took this photo of me at Niagara Falls, and there's this place called I think it's called the Dead Man's Cliff or something, but it's in Niagara Falls, but it's on the Canadian side, and I hung my feet off the edge and I took this picture, like a POV picture, and then I got arrested after. Yeah, the Canadians did not like that. But the cool thing was that picture ended up being in the Australian newspaper as photo of the week.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Did you have to get through a barrier to get to where you were?
It was just a little fence. I hopped the fence and then I took that picture. But it was so cool because this girl on Instagram messaged me from Australia and said, "Hey, I don't know if you know this, but your picture's in the newspaper." And I messaged her back and I said, "Wow, thank you. Could you please send me that newspaper?" And so she sent it to me. And that was, I think, by far one of the most expensive picture I ever took, but the coolest one for sure.
Were you scared at all when you took the photo?
No. I mean, I think I knew what I was doing and I didn't feel like I was in danger. I think for most of the people that were watching, they were scared. They weren't really sure what they were going to see. I'm not sure if they thought like, "Oh, this is going to be the last moments of this guy." And we're just watching it. But no, it wasn't that bad for me. No.
So what was it like spending parts of your childhood on your island home in Pompeii?
I think at the time, I really didn't realize how very simple, but also very beautiful it was growing up there. I really do tell people that I grew up in the jungle. My grandma's house is nestled in the mountains of Sokes, and we grew up very simple. I mean, we'd had no electricity sometimes. We'd have lanterns, and then growing up, I had fish in every way. Yeah, and then, you know, I'd go with my grandpa, we'd go up to the land and work the lands and, you know, get the taro, get the bananas. But life there was really just like how you would see a simple island lifestyle. We had a village and everyone in the village knew each other, generations of families that were good friends, and we'd all go to each other's functions. And yeah, it's very simple, but it's really beautiful.
When you say you've had fish in every way, can you tell me some of the different ways?
I think when you grow up in a house where all your siblings are your cousins as well, my grandma had to make sure that the fish went a long way. So we had a lot of fish soup. We had fish fried. Sashimi was like raw fish is like a big one. That'd be a treat sometimes. But literally every way you can think of.
Oh, I remember when I was in Abayang many years ago when I was about 5 years old, and we had dried fish, which was kind of like beef jerky, but fish. Did you have it that, or was that just in?
Yeah, sometimes we have these very salty fish. Yeah, we'll just dry those out too. They're like small.
Yeah, I love them. Probably not great for you, but anyway. If you were to paint me a picture of your childhood on the islands, what would it look like?
Childhood on the islands consisted of, from a really very, very early age, I grew up mainly surrounded by women. It's a very, it's a matriarchal system where some of the cultural things that happen, so land itself is passed down to the women, is kept in the family through the women. But I was raised by my aunties, my grandma, and my mom. And so we would, I would help out doing the chores, and after chores, I'd go to school, and school, I would just walk on the road, and sometimes people would just pick you up and say, hey, where are you going? And then, oh, I'm going to school. But there was no sense of, oh, stranger danger, because everyone knew each other and everyone helped each other. And so I also, just remembering, there's a lot of cultural protocols as far as ceremonies. So there's a lot of different functions that happen within a Micronesian community or a village. And going to different functions, you'd make sure you brought fish, pig, taro, and I would go with my uncles and help prepare those too. And then sometimes just learning the different ways to prepare the dishes or prepare the pigs. So growing up was just a sense of really deep culture. You just get really deep within the culture, and then you just learn how to also go fishing, learn how to take care of the land. I think that was the big thing, was that the land is always, so it's going to always give back to you. So you always have to make sure you take care of the land. So, yeah.
Mm. What differences did you notice between life in Pompeii and here in Hawaii?
It was huge. When I moved here, my family moved here when I was six. At the time, I didn't know any English, but I knew three different dialects at the time. So as a kid, it was really hard for me to try to adjust from that kind of social setting and the social norms between somewhere that's more westernized versus somewhere it's like very much village mentality or village culture. It's really different. And for a kid, that was really obvious for me. And I think what I took from it was that Hawaii, in its sense, is very much part of the, is very first world. And the village where I grew up, you can't really consider it third, but it was very much like second. We had, you know, some of the things that you would find here in Hawaii, but at the same time, some of the resources were very hard to get. And so some of the things that I took for granted growing up here in Hawaii, I remember that back in the islands, we didn't have that. So I think as a kid, I remember one of the big things was I got to come here to Hawaii and I got to shower with warm water. That blew my mind. Just being able to do that, because back home, you come home after a long day and then you have to get cold water, or in the morning is worse when you got to get ready for school. You got to get that cold water. Oof.
Yeah. What was that feeling like when you had that warm shower for the first time here?
I remember I had goosebumps. It was crazy. It blew my mind. I was like, I could do this every day? Yeah, because if you wanted a hot shower, you'd have to boil hot water.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that for me was crazy, just how you could get that instantaneous hot shower.
Ugh, luxury. You mentioned that you spoke three dialects. Do you still speak them now?
I still do, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So my family is actually originally from an outer island of Chuuk called Mochluk, but we had migrated there way before I was born. I think my great-great-grandparents, because there was like a typhoon that hit our island, and so we had to migrate there. And there was a big migration of the Mortlakis community. And at the time, Pompeii had a lot of land to give to families. So my family was my family was fortunate enough to get a big portion of land on Sokes. And so that's where we've been since then. So at home, I spoke Mochluk. And then when I'm out with friends or when I went to school, I spoke Punapan. And then when I'm in school and the teachers are talking to me, we were speaking like very broken English.
How important is it to continue language?
It's huge. I think I realize it too when I talk with my grandma. There are things that she tells me in our language that have a different meaning and it hits a little different versus if she tried to translate it to English, there's a lot of things that are missing. Some of the words that are in Mochluk have a different kind of feeling to it versus if you were to say it in English. Mm. So I think it's very important. I think for me, I got a really good sense of who I am because I know my language.
Yeah. Let's shift it a little bit now. So where do you think your interest in filmmaking came from?
I honestly think it came from a really early age. I remember my family was one of the very first in the village that was fortunate enough to get a TV. And when we got a TV, we had a lot of neighbors that would be walking on the road. And when they saw that neon light coming out from our house, they were just attracted to it. So as a kid, I remember we'd all be in our house watching TV. But as I looked around, I started seeing just all our neighbors by our window looking in and watching TV. But I think at that time, it kind of sparked like a really great imagination for me, because I didn't realize that we were actually very poor, because I felt like we had a lot. And I never went one day without eating. We always ate. So I didn't really realize that we were coming from a place where, like, we were very poor until I moved to Hawaii. But it was living there and being able to see the life outside of Pompeii, because Pompeii was all I knew, and that was like a normal for me every day. And I think watching TV at that early age just really got to spark my imagination. And I remember as a kid, all our cousins would go and we'd play and try to reenact the things that we saw on TV, but none of us knew English, so it was just a bunch of blabbering. Yeah, we'd try to, you know, play like Superman or do all the things that we saw on TV. So yeah. Dragon Ball Z was huge at that time too.
Who was it?
It was the show Dragon Ball Z or Power Rangers.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So what brought you to start exploring filmmaking?
I got really into photography first and videography when I was living in New York at the time. I got stationed in New York and I was by myself. I knew nobody. I had no family, no friends. And I remember just being so depressed. I had just come back from my second deployment and I was just so lost. I was so lost. And I remember just being in a really state of mind of just, okay, I could be here and I could be super depressed, or I could try to find the beauty of this place. And New York is really beautiful. And so I remember a really good friend of mine had a camera, and so he showed me how to use his camera. And so we started just going out and adventuring, started going out and taking pictures of parts of New York. And I got into different types of photography and videography really in New York, but it came from me being really lost and depressed in New York and trying to see the best side of it.
So what pushed you to commit everything to this role?
I was a paralegal in the military, and I remember that at the time, I thought that being a paralegal was going to be fun. And the work itself was interesting. I think when I was starting to go to court and I started seeing that I was witnessing some of the worst moments in people's lives, and families were getting broken apart, and I couldn't do that anymore. I knew that that wasn't it for me. I knew that I had to change my role as far as like what I wanted to do. And at the time, because I was still doing photography and videography, I knew that, hey, this is where I want to go towards. I want to see more of the beautiful side of things than the worst parts of people's lives. And that's really what really did it for me. And I remember making that phone call to my mom, and trying to explain to her that, I'm going to leave this very secure job and go be a photographer.
And, and what was her reaction?
I think just like any mom would, she was very worried. You know, so I think she was worried, how would you be able to feed yourself? Like, I think she just thought my baby's going to starve. He's going to be homeless in Hawaii. But I just had such a strong feeling of this is really where I wanted to go with my career. I wanted to get out of the military and come back home. New York was starting to really burn me out. I think it's a place that's a lot of opportunities, but as far as like really who I am, because I'm such an island boy and I grew up back home and grew up here in Hawaii, I just knew that I was longing to come back either to Hawaii or to Pompeii.
How long were you a paralegal?
4 years.
Right.
Yeah, so it's four very long years.
Was there a transition from being a paralegal to an artist, a photographer, or was it just a clean break one to the next?
No, I think because I was still on the weekends going out to shoot while I was still a paralegal, so it was a very much smooth transition as far as me going into the career path of being in the creative side, especially because I was really fortunate enough that once I got out, I was hired by a media company here in Hawaii to go work for them. And I got to learn really a lot of my basic skills as far as being a photographer and videographer through that. I worked a bunch of weddings. I did like concerts and first birthday parties. Yeah. So the media company really taught me a lot.
So let's do a quick recap. So you were a paralegal for 4 years. Photography and filmmaking was a hobby on the weekends, but now that's become full time for you. Where did this idea to start your own production company come from?
So, I mean, it was always in my head because I was working for the media company, but I knew that that wasn't forever. I was going to want to go break off and do my own thing at some point. But I have a cousin that's also here. His name is Calvin Apis. And we met up when I first got out of the military, and he told me that he was also into photography and videography. And at the time, he was trying to start his company, So Said Productions. He was trying to start a company. And we, being just cousins, we were like, hey, I like videography. You like it. We're both from the same place. Why not? Why not work together and start something up? And we really weren't too sure of where So Said was going to go at the time. But we knew we wanted to work together and try to create something for our people, for the Micronesian community. And at the time, we were just doing a lot of very, like, lifestyle adventure. He's really into surfing. I was into traveling, and that's really where it started. But it's just evolved.
So what does So Said Life focus on capturing now?
So Said, really, the main goal now for So Said is to highlight and capture the Micronesian community and be able to take the narrative back for ourselves and tell our own stories. At the time, I think, not too long ago, 2, 3, 4 years ago, the media here in Hawaii, the social feel of the Micronesian community was just a little different. And we were wanting to change the narrative by telling our own stories and the way we want to tell it and highlight the really good things about our people and the amazing things that we can do and how beautiful our culture is.
What does So Said mean?
So the word so is from, and then said itself is ocean. So in two languages, being Pohnpei, it means ocean people, and then Chukis, it also means ocean people.
You've explained a little bit of why, you know, Micronesia, but I guess in a world where there's so many things that would be more, I guess, in demand and probably more profitable for a new business, why did you think it was so important to focus on capturing Micronesians?
I think it was so important because there's a lot of really beautiful things in our culture. I mean, for me, I draw a lot of my aesthetic choices from growing up and seeing the vibrant colors in our culture. So our skirts to even our songs. And I remember as a kid when I'd grow up and I'd go to these cultural events and gatherings, there's protocols and there's ceremonies, there's protocols, but there'd always be a guide and he's kind of guiding their ceremony, and aunties would be going around singing and they're oiled up and there's just so many smells and pigs are getting slaughtered. So you're hearing just so many things happening, and then they're pounding kava. And so there's also a rhythm to the pounding of the kava, but if you've never heard it, it's just so, it's an overload to your sensories because there's so many sounds, there's smells, and it's hot. So really, I took a lot of that as my inspiration for what I see as island aesthetics in my filmmaking and in the way I edit.
How is filmmaking a unique storytelling tool?
Wow. I think that when you have the power to create a story and give people the chance to see what you see, it's a really cool way to communicate. And our people have been doing it for a very long time. We've been telling stories, and knowledge has been passed down through stories. Knowledge has been passed down through our songs. I got a chance to go and see a play recently, and it was, it's called Ain't Nothing Micro About Micronesia. And it was a really cool play, but in the play, they highlighted some of the stories from the Marshall Islands. And in the stories, it talks about a mom having her three sons, and they were all racing. And, you know, in the story itself, there's a lot of really cool things that you can take from it afterwards. But the story is supposed to tell navigators how to locate the different stars. And they made that into a story, but also a song. So I think when storytelling is used in that way, it's very powerful. It carries a lot of the knowledge that we are trying to still preserve.
Who are the storytellers in your family, other than yourself?
I had a lot of really good stories. My grandma. My grandma was the one that used to tell me a lot of these stories. And growing up, she'd tell me these stories before I went to bed. And, you know, as a kid, it just sparked my imagination. And I just had a different feeling. And my grandma's house is really like in the jungle. So when you're hearing all the noise at night, and she had this big plumeria tree outside of her house. So when the wind was blowing, you just smell plumeria. And then, you know, we didn't have electricity. So that lantern, too, gave it some effect. So, yeah, my grandma was the big storyteller. Yeah.
What opportunities have emerged for you as a filmmaker?
I've been very fortunate. I've had a lot of really cool opportunities. And I think the most recent one was I was able to join National Geographic in shooting a docuseries called Pristine Seas. So we went to Kosrae and we shot the Micronesian Expo that was there. And then as well as Pohnpei, we went and we shot a few things in Pohnpei. So that in itself has been one of my most recent cool gigs that I've been able to do.
How was that, shooting back in Pohnpei for National Geographic? What did your family think of that?
It was huge. Yeah. It's huge. I think for us, it's just like, I've always just thought like, oh, that'd be so cool, maybe one day. And it happened. And it was just like, for my family especially, they hadn't seen me in 8 years. So for me to go back home and it's all paid for on a work trip with National Geographic, they were just blown away.
How important is it to have someone from Pohnpei taking these photos and having them on a global stage for other people to see?
I think it's very important. I think when you talk about capturing these places and these people, a lot of the times, like, of course you can be very creative and you can be very talented, but if you're not really from the place and you're capturing it within your own lens, that's your eyes. So in a way, when it's your own people and they're able to capture it in their lens, in their way, it's just something more meaningful, it's deeper that way, I think.
What's something that you'd like to capture in the future?
I would love to be able to travel through all the Micronesian islands and capture just the way of living. Some of the islands are still so remote, so the way of living has still been very much capsulized. And so I think that's one of my main goals, is to one day be able to just go to each island and take pictures of the people, capture the stories, and hear the older generation, especially with the, I think some of the practices are dying out and the ones that are carrying it are older now. So navigating is one of them. I think it's really important that while our elders that have the knowledge are still here, that the younger generation takes that opportunity and listen, sit down, talk with them. And then for me, I think I would love to be able to capture that on camera and create something with that.
To date, other than what you just mentioned with National Geographic being in Pohnpei, what would you say is another one of your highlights in filmmaking or photography?
Really, I think one of the big highlights for me is just to show the younger generation that we can do this. We sometimes get lost and think that, oh, see, these things are a little too far-fetched that we can do. But I think being able to go and be a photographer and filmmaker in today's age, time and age, really, I think that was the big one for me, is to show the younger generation that it's possible. If you can, if you want to do it and you had the will and imagination, you can do it.
What have people in your community said about your work?
Well, I've been, it's, so far it's been all really good. I'm just hoping that I keep making them proud, but so far everything has been, the feedback has been great. Just more or less like keep going, keep doing it.
What's the Micronesian population like here in Hawaii?
Surprisingly, it's a big, large community. Yeah. I noticed that, especially when I was back in Pompeii and I was walking around in my village. A lot of my neighbors, a lot of the homes are empty now. And it's because a lot of them have moved to either the States or Hawaii being the closest place that they can move to. So the community, the Micronesian community here in Hawaii is growing every year, and it's a big one now.
So we are actually here same time for FESPAC, both working. Tell me about some of the work that you'll be doing here for FESPAC.
Yes, so I'm covering the FSM delegation, but I'm a media. I got a chance to go out to the Va'a or the Va'a ceremony yesterday. I got to meet the grand navigators out of Saipan in the CNMI and got to capture some of them. And so it's just started, but my main job here for FESPAC is going to be covering for the FSM delegation.
And have you had a chance to catch up with the FSM delegation? Do you know some of them? I imagine you do.
Surprisingly, I haven't had a chance to yet. But once I see them, I'm going to definitely recognize a few of them because they keep seeing this guy with a bun at, you know, I was in Pompeii and sometimes I was in like Kashrai. So they know, oh, this guy with his camera, he's plugged in here somehow. So I know I'll see some of them and just be really happy to see them again.
Yeah. Where do you want your filmmaking to take you?
I have high goals. I think at some point I would love my filmmaking to make it onto big screens. I would love to create documentaries and capture these stories of our people. And I think that's really my goal, is I want to work towards creating my own film. And hopefully that'll be, you know, shot with people from back home and then show it back home to the people.
Are there any other Micronesian people that have come before you that have worked in filmmaking that you've looked up to?
So actually, not filmmaking per se, but I do have an uncle, and he was the camera guy for the university back home. He's really the one that first picked up a camera in our family and had a job doing that. And so it's always funny when I see him back in Pompeii, because I'm always like, hey, uncle, you're the one, you started it. And now within our family alone, so it's me and my cousin, but then we also have three other cousins back in Pompeii that are also into filmmaking. And so they have their own companies back home, and they do photography and videography for some of the companies, and then as well as for their own companies.
What do you think it would mean for you to have your first film out there as a Micronesian man, out there for other Micronesians to see? How important would that be?
It'll be huge. It'll be huge for our people. I think we've never had that chance to see ourselves on screen. You know, I think it's just the very beginning right now. The younger generation are seeing some of the older generation, or some of us that are in these spaces as far as academia or as far as like out there in the job force doing really cool things. But to be able to see ourselves on screen, I think it does something for especially a young person. It just gives them the confidence to know that you are important, your voice is important, and your imagination is powerful, whatever you want to do.
Incredible. I'm so glad that I got to meet you and interview you face-to-face here in Hawaii. Thanks so much for your time today, Matt.
Thank you, Bobby.
That was Matt Howard, co-creator of So Said Life Productions, a storytelling company based here in Hawaii. You've been listening to Stories from the Pacific. I'm Bobby McCumber. And to hear more great stories about unique and incredible people from the Pacific, just search for Stories from the Pacific on ABC Radio Australia. And if you or someone you know has an interesting story to share, you can email us at storiesfromthepacific@abc.net.au. This story was produced on the lands of the Yuggera and Turrbal people.